following program is brought to you in living color on NBC.
Spanning the globe to bring you the latest in classic rock news and comment. It's the Classic Guitar Rock Daily Update with your host, Jeremy Lunnon.
With my gas station fountain drink in hand, we're ready to kick off another week. Yeah, it's the Classic Guitar Rock Daily Update. I'm your friend, Jeremy, and glad to have you here. Glad to start out a new week. Let's rock. Okay, here's our first, the theme of the first few stories. They come from our box set file. I want to talk about box sets for a minute. Okay, there's this thing. I'm also kind of a comic book nerd. Any of you into comic books? There are similar things that happen, okay? Back in the day, it was organic, right? We back in the 70s, we bought comic books. The only place you could get comic books was at a the store, right? There weren't comic book stores. You actually bought them at the store. Like there would be a rack as you walked into 7-Eleven or your local convenience store that had comic books on it. Or you go to Kmart and in the magazine and book section, there would be comic books. And every kid I knew, we bought comic books. Didn't think anything of them. We read them. We threw them under our bed. They got all stepped on and wrinkled. The dog chewed on them. You know, it didn't matter. They cost 25 cents. I think when I started buying comic books, they were 25 cents, then 30 cents. And by the time I was done, they were like 45 cents. So then what happened is, why am I talking about comic? I didn't mean to go down this hole, but we started. So let's just keep going. Okay. So then what happens is, it's like baseball cards. You could throw baseball cards in here too. Remember, we would clip baseball cards in our bicycle spokes to make the noise in the, well, we didn't know they were going to be worth anything any day in, you know, someday. We didn't know they'd be worth anything. So we didn't think anything of it. And then finally, like in the 90s and 2000s, people start, you know, realizing that, oh, comic books are collectible. Oh, you can, it's an investment. And the comic book, comic books are ruined now, because what they do then is the companies try and make something collectible. And how do they do that? Well, they'll make variant covers, right? Instead of just releasing a cover, hang on. Okay, there we go. Instead of just, you know, releasing a comic book, they release it with like 8 different covers, thinking that they'll be collectible for the different variants of the color of the covers. So it's this forced collector status, which is stupid. I mean, it's dumb. And then people will actually pay big money to send their comic book off to be graded, where they put it in this plastic hermetically sealed case so you can never open up and enjoy the comic book again, but you can show people, this is rated a 9.8. It's worth $400. Yeah, it's stupid. Well, music, the record companies have done the same thing, right? They started this box set thing, and they've been doing it for 20 years now, right? They release box sets. And again, it's just a ploy to get fat guys in their basement, I won't name any names, to fork out more money on music they probably already have. But what they try to do with most box sets is they'll throw in some extras. You know, we'll throw in some demos in there. We'll throw in a mono version, right? They just dig up crap they can add to this box set. So said fat guy in his basement, I won't name any names, will feel like he can justify spending all this money for a box set. So box sets are a big deal. And then everyone has box sets. So I'm going to talk about two box sets that's coming out. The first one, Dokken released a box set last year. Okay, Jeff Pilson, bass player of Dokken, also bass player in Foreigner. He's a producer. He's in Machine. He's in Revolution Saints. He's one of these journeyman musicians. And I love Jeff Pilson. He's awesome, super talented. He ain't happy with the box set that Dokken released. He says, quote, okay, so only the box set was called the Elektra Albums 1983 to 1987. So it included the band's first four albums, Breaking the Chains, Tooth and Nail, Under Lock and Key, and Back for the Attack. Pilsen did not play on Breaking the Chains, by the way. That was Juan Crucier, who's actually in Rat. He plays on Breaking the Chains. A lot of folks don't know that. But here's what Jeff had to say about the box set. Quote, "I was disappointed in the box set that came out last year. I just thought it was plain. There's no extras whatsoever. And see, that's corporate people making decisions not based on anything artistic or anything fan-oriented. And that pisses me off, frankly." But he says, well, you know, "I would love for people to buy it, of course. You know, he makes a little money when they buy it." But he says, quote, "It kind of pisses me off that they put out a product with so little thought behind it. I've got stuff, I'm cleaning it up. It's a family show. I've got stuff lying around that could have been great extra stuff. And I offered, by the way, and nobody listened. And that makes me angry." Then he says, "They didn't remaster the vinyl correctly. I would love to see it done correctly. And there are companies that do it. But now they're not going to be interested because it just came out." Okay, so he's not happy about that box set. And that's kind of the bigger thing that I was just ranting about, is that this idea, it's all money grabs, guys. It's all money grabs. Some box sets are great because you get some extra stuff. But in this case, it sounds like it's nothing. All they did was basically reissue the first four albums with no special stuff. And he's irritated by that. Here's another box set. A piece of news coming out. Not really a box. I shouldn't call this a box set. It's a re-release. It's a special commemorative. Same thing. Let's re-release this album. Again, nothing's changed. We might have tweaked the EQ a little bit, but there's a fat guy in his basement somewhere willing to fork out the money. I won't mention any names. Okay. Yes is re-releasing, A limited edition, again, limited edition, again, so you'll think it's collectible, collector's item, the album Talk. Now, Talk is one of these albums that a lot of the diehard Yes fans, maybe not big fans of. I love the Talk album. It might be one of my, but I'm a huge Trevor Rabin fan. Again, you've heard my thoughts on Trevor Rabin. Trevor Rabin, Yes would have ended in 1980 without Trevor Rabin. That's a fact. That's a fact. They would have been done. Without the 90125 album, Yes would have been done. And that is a Trevor Rabin album. And then, oh, by the way, at the last minute, let's bring John Anderson in and call it Yes. I mean, that album was pretty much done and in the can. And then they just add John Anderson to it. So this Talk album is getting the reissue treatment. Plus, there'll be eight bonus studio tracks. See, at least they're adding some special goodies to this. Eight bonus studio tracks and a previously unreleased live concert. Now, what's unique about Talk is actually the only album, or I should say the first album, where John Anderson and Trevor Rabin actually collaborated on songwriting. The previous efforts, 90125, I don't know that John helped write anything. He just kind of came in at the end. But Big Generator, they wrote separately, right? They both had ideas, but they'd kind of work on everything separately. Well, they actually collaborated on the Talk album. And I think the relationship between Anderson and Rabin is good, because remember, for a couple of years, they were touring as Anderson, Rabin, Wakeman. You know, it was kind of there was competing Yes bands on tour. It was the ARW and the band calling themselves Yes at the same time. So I think the relationship is good between John and Trevor. But anyways, Talk is getting the re-release treatment as well, but it actually has more bonus stuff than, like, for instance, the Dokken box set. Michael Marullo is stopping by, checking in. Michael says, "I had to buy a Black Sabbath set to get the Tony Martin years. It was affordable and practical because the Tony Martin years stopped being released. Very good point. On Friday, we talked about the Tony Martin box set, and that's a completely legit reason to buy it because that's the only way you can buy it now because the Tony Martin years have not, they're out of print. You can't find them. On Spotify, I believe you can stream Eternal Idol and maybe Headless Cross, but you can't get the Forbidden and Tear. There, you can't stream those on Spotify. Michael, by the way, thank you for chiming in. So yeah, this whole box set thing is an interesting thing, right? And everyone does it. It's just part of the marketing arm of the record companies. These box sets, these reissues, when in reality, they're just selling you stuff you already have. But we line up and we buy it. I'll buy that. We do it because, hey, it's on a different color vinyl. Or it's like the variant covers of comic books. Same thing. We're suckers. And I'm as guilty as the next guy. All right. On May 17th, AC/DC will kick off their first tour since 2016, and they've just announced the opening band for the European run. Have you heard of these guys? The Pretty Reckless? Not familiar with them, but the Pretty Reckless have been tabbed as special guests for the 21 dates of the tour. Apparently, the Pretty Reckless formed in 2009. They've released 4 full-length albums, and I guess they're really cool. So that's who will be opening for AC/DC on their upcoming tour that starts May 17th. Speaking of opening bands, another band I wasn't aware of, I got to check this out because it sounds intriguing, titillating. Acclaimed Mongolian metal band. They could perhaps be Mongolia's greatest metal band. It's The Who. Not that Who. The Who. H-U. The Who. The other Who. They'll be showing up later in the update, but The Who, H-U, will be joining Iron Maiden on all shows throughout North America. A Mongolian metal band. The Who comments on their social media, quote, Iron Maiden is the master of the masters of rock music. They are one of the biggest inspirations to us. The way that they create and perform their music is majestic, and we still remember the first time we heard their Trooper song and felt the deep energy behind each word. Something about their rhythm hits so close to home, and we can't wait to be on tour with them for the first time. America, we will see you very soon, and be prepared for the mind-blowing shows we will bring to you. The Who. H-U. The Who. There's an NPR story about The Who says, quote, a band from Mongolia that blends the screaming guitars of heavy metal and traditional Mongolian guttural singing. I don't know what that sounds like. What is that? But anyways, sign me up for The Who. H-U. They'll be opening for Iron Maiden. We talked about this last week. Remember, Patty Boyd. Awkward. Okay, so Clapton and George Harrison were best buddies. They're good friends. Harrison's married to Patty Boyd, like 10 years, 67 to, yeah, like 10 years, 11 years they were married from like 67 to 77, something like that. Well, the whole time Clapton's got the hots for Patty Boyd. He's like sending her letters. He wrote a song called Layla about her. He wrote Wonderful Tonight about Patty Boyd. So we already mentioned that she was auctioning off some of these steamy love letters from Eric Clapton. Well, she also sold the artwork for Layla. You know, the painting that's on Derek and the Dominoes. I can't show it to you because we're, you know, it's a podcast, but you're probably all familiar with it. It's the cover of the 1970s Layla and Other Assorted Love Songs by Derek and the Dominoes. So Clapton bought that original artwork from the son of the guy who painted it. And then he gave it to George Harrison. And then, well, George, I'm having a fling with your wife, but here's a painting for you. Well, then when George gave that to Patty Boyd, here's the thing. Over the years, it seems like they were all okay with it. Awkward. Anyways, she auctioned that painting for $2.5 million. So between that painting and the steamy love letters and some other memorabilia, she got a total of $3.6 million for her auction last week. So the Layla painting, the letters from Clapton, all of that, it's all been sold. She made $3.6 million. Before their split, they divorced in 77, Harrison and Patty Boyd. But before their split, Clapton attempted to woo Boyd away from Harrison, despite the two guitarists being friends. Among the sold items was a 1970 letter to Boyd from Clapton, which read, "Dearest L, it seems like an eternity since I last saw or spoke to you. If there is still a feeling in your heart for me, you must let me know. Don't telephone, send a letter. That's much safer. Because I don't want George to give me the El Kabong over the head with a Les Paul." Okay. Whew. Okay. Guys, we've got an opportunity to talk about our love for the awesome Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. What am I talking about? We hate the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame because it's a big steaming pile of poop. But here's an opportunity to talk about it. Rick Emmett of Triumph, he believes Triumph has never gotten serious consideration for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame due to a lingering huge prejudice against bands like his. He says, quote, "In the United States, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, politically, I mean, we were on RCA Records, which was of the seven major labels, they were number six. And then we sued them and we lost. And then we moved to MCA and they were the seventh largest. They were the smallest and they had the least impact of all the labels," Emmett explained. Quote, open quote, "So voting wise, we were never that big. We didn't sell enough records. We didn't have enough of a commercial industrial kind of impact to have it be the people go, oh yeah, well, I remember when they went quadruple platinum. We never did go quadruple platinum. We struggled to get hold of a platinum. And it would eventually happen with some of the records, but not very many of them. And then you're in a world where there's Journey. Well, they went like 7 times platinum, 10 times platinum. Oh, there's Foreigner. There's some noise this year about Foreigner. There's probably nothing in their catalog that was under 5 or 6 times platinum. They deserve to be in there. They really do." Okay. All of these are valid points, right? But I think Rick is missing the point. Well, let me finish the quote. "There was a huge prejudice that Rolling Stone and Hall of Fame co-founder Jan Winner." Now, here's the thing. No surprise that both Rolling Stone and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame are complete jokes. Jan Winner was kind of in charge of both, and he's apparently a jerk nozzle. It bled throughout the entire board of that thing, which was, no, we're only going to recognize the truly great. And the thing that defines truly great is what I say is truly great, right? And Jan Winner thought Foreigner, Rush, Styx, Triumph, he thought all that stuff was crap. And he would hire writers to write stuff in Rolling Stone that would say, yeah, these bands are crap. They're terrible. They're crap. And so that became part of the standard thing of, yeah, well, no, we're not going to put them in the Hall of Fame because they're, my word, crap. There you go. Well, that part is spot on. And what I was going to say, what Rick Emmett is missing in his analysis is the fact that the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and Rolling Stone are complete jokes run by people who think they're smarter than everyone else, right? When in reality, they're dork ratchets, okay? So he brings up some valid points that Triumph, I mean, they didn't sell near as much as Journey. Journey got in a few years ago. They didn't sell near as much as Foreigner, which we think Foreigner will finally get in this year. But the bottom line is Jan Winner had a prejudice against hard rock bands. Okay. He didn't like them. That's why Styx isn't. And the idea that Styx and Foreigner and Boston and Kansas are in there. That's just ridiculous. Just super ridiculous. Now, if the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame was legit, based on the points that Rick Emmett said, I mean, maybe you could justify them not being in there. Maybe. Personally, I think they should be. But yeah, they're not on the same level fame-wise. It is the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, so fame is a component. They're not on the same level fame-wise as some of these other bands mentioned, many of which are still not in the hall, by the way. Styx, okay, Foreigner, Kansas, Boston, Bad Company. That's the problem, Rick. It's the problem is you've got an organization that's a joke, right? That shouldn't call itself. They'd solve a multiple of problems if they just wouldn't call themselves the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I mean, that would, if you're going to call yourself the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, you should have some rock and roll bands in there. I mean, they have some, but they've left out a lot and they've added a lot of crap bands. Okay, we talked about The Who earlier. Now let's talk about The Who. The WHO, The Who. Pete Townsend has commented on The Who's future, suggesting the legendary act may get back on the road for an extensive farewell tour. And here's the thing. It's either very refreshing or very annoying that Pete basically says, yeah, we'd do it for the money. It feels to me, quote, it feels to me like there's one thing The Who can do, the rocker explained to the New York Times, and that's a final tour where we play every territory in the world and then crawl off to die. And the only reason they do it is for the money. He says, quote, I don't get much of a buzz from performing with The Who. If I'm really honest, I've been touring for the money. My idea of an ordinary lifestyle is pretty elevated, meaning he just assumes stay home. Okay, just don't look at kiddie porn again, Pete. Just stay away from that stuff. Okay, but he's like, yeah, we'll do another tour for the money. All right, I got an email. Dear CGR, I'm a follower of your podcast and enjoy listening. I am a huge concert goer. I usually attend at least one concert a month. I believe we are around the same age. I am 58. I am just curious to hear what some of your favorite live shows have been. Thanks for keeping the classic rock flag flying. Nasty Nick Harbertson. Nick, thank you. Thank you for coming in or for sending me the email. By the way, any of you can email me, classicguitarrock@mail.com. I am 56, so you got a couple years on me. I've seen some great concerts. One of my favorites was, I saw Rush on three consecutive tours, Signals, Grace Under Pressure, Power Windows. I really liked when I saw them on Signals. I saw Van Halen on Diver Down and on Unlawful Carnal Knowledge. Those were both great shows. Probably Diver Down I enjoyed more because that was the first time I'd seen Van Halen. I saw Ozzy's Diary of a Madman. That was a great show. So I've seen several really good shows. One that jumps out to me, and I won't say this is my favorite show of all time, but it was a show that I didn't really have any expectations. I went because my brother bought me a ticket. And me and my friend, my brother's name is Jeff. My friend's name was Jeff. So me and the two Jeffs in Norman, Oklahoma, went and saw Billy Squire. And I liked Billy Squire. That was the Emotions in Motion. So I was familiar with, all the songs from The Stroke. And then they were playing Emotions in Motion on the radio at that time. So, and I liked the videos on him. So I wasn't a rabid, Billy Squire fan. So I had no expectations and we went and we saw them. The opening band was Saga. They were great, but I gotta say, Billy Squier was one of the best concerts I've seen, and I wasn't expecting it. I had no expectation. And so I was very pleasantly surprised when I saw Billy Squier. That would have been like 83 or 84. It was just a rocking show. It was a great show. Band was awesome. It was just a really good show. That's been one of my favorites. But I was lucky enough to see pretty much everyone you could see in the, there were some exceptions. I've never seen AC/DC live. I've seen pretty much everyone else live. And yeah, there were great shows. Back then I saw Ozzy on Bark at the Moon also, but that Billy Squier show jumps out at me because it was, again, me and my friend Jeff and even my brother Jeff, we liked Billy Squier. I don't think it wasn't super excited. Like at the time I was really big into Ozzy and Rush. I would have been really excited. And this was like, yeah, this will be cool. We'll go see. But coming away from that, we were all impressed. We're like, that show was way better than what we thought it would be. So it was a great show. Nick, thank you so much for listening to the podcast. And thank you so much for your email. Please email me, classicguitarrock@mail.com. And Michael says, Michael, you're probably right. I hope you're wrong. But he says, Billie Eilish will be in before Triumph. And he's probably right. Billie Eilish will probably go in next year. Well, I don't know that. What do you got to wait, 15 years? She'll definitely go in before Triumph. I think you're right. And that's sad. Sad. Guys, thank you so much for tuning in for the daily update. And I will soon have a big announcement for you, I think. I'm working on some things in the background. The machinations are happening. I think I'll have a big announcement to make here in the next, I don't know, week or so. So stay tuned. Thanks so much for tuning in. Appreciate you. We'll do it all again tomorrow. Live long and prosper. Bye-bye.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard.
Thanks for listening. You can email Jeremy at classicguitarrock@mail.com.
Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it.
Tune in each weekday for the Classic Guitar Rock Daily Update.